Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we look at the year ahead in the Middle East and how the United States will deal with the issues that dominate that part of the world.
If we don't help friends on the ground very quickly, there will be no choice in Syria except Bashar al-Assad on one side and jihadi extremists on the other.
Then, we report on the foreign policy challenges President Obama will face in his last 2 years in office.
These talks aren't going to suddenly get easier just because we extend them.
Problems in the Middle East and elsewhere, and how the United States will be involved in helping to solve them. That is the subject of our program today. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America, and this is our daily program, As It Is. It has been 4 years since uprisings in the Middle East ended a long period of stability. Most observers believe 2015 will be another violent year there. They say political leaders will be forced to make difficult decisions and take strong action. A year ago, few people had heard of the Islamic State terrorist group. But the group quickly took control of large parts of Syria and Iraq. Experts said the militants were also a threat to many other countries. However, hundreds of airstrikes appear to have hurt the terrorists. Experts such as Paul Salem of the Middle East Institute predict 2015 will be a difficult year for the Islamic State.
I think the fight against the Islamic State will progress in Iraq. I think Iraq, between the Kurdish army and the National Army based in Baghdad, with strong U.S. support, will make progress in 2015.
But it does not appear there will be an improvement in the situation in Syria, where the United States is planning to train anti-government fighters. Robert Ford was the U.S. ambassador to Syria. He says more needs to be done.
If we don't help friends on the ground very quickly, there will be no choice in Syria except Bashar al-Assad on one side and jihadi extremists on the other.
IS became known when it beheaded Western hostages, including journalists, and showed videos of the beheadings on the Internet. Daniel Serwer is a professor at Johns Hopkins University. He says the beheadings caused the terrorists to lose support.
I think I would bet on it to lose some territory because I think it's making serious mistakes, especially in Iraq, where it has slaughtered members of several Sunni tribes.
The U.S. military says Islamic State fighters have entered Libya, where there is great instability. General David Rodriguez leads the U.S. Africa Command.
People coming for training and logistics support right now for training sites, and that's what we see right now.
There is also instability in Yemen, which has had several changes of leadership in recent months. Members of the Shiite Muslim Houthi movement are fighting members of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Mr. Salem of the Middle East Institute said it is not likely the area will be calm for many years. He said the evidence suggests the Middle East will remain an unstable and unpredictable place in this century. You are listening to As It Is on the Voice of America. A new year joins new challenges to old ones. Many disputes between countries and between governments and rebels continued throughout last year, and they continue as 2015 begins. Barack Obama faces many challenges as he enters his final 2 years as president. In December, Mr. Obama marked the end of America's longest war.
After more than 13 years, our combat mission in Afghanistan will be over.
But the Department of Defense says that does not mean America will no longer help Afghanistan. Rear Admiral John Kirby is a department spokesman. He spoke to reporters before 2014 ended.
It's not like on December 31st we're just going to walk away. We aren't. We're going to remain.
More than 10,000 American troops will remain in Afghanistan this year. They will help the Afghanistan Air Force. They will train Afghan troops. And they will help fight terrorists. The Afghan troops need the help because Taliban fighters have increased their attacks. In 2015, the United States and other countries will also continue the fight against Islamic State militants. The group became known to many in 2014 after it quickly took control of large parts of Iraq and Syria. The world learned more about the group when it showed videos of one of its members beheading Western hostages. Airstrikes against the group appear to be working. Military experts predict the attacks will continue to weaken the terrorists. In Iran, the United States and five other world powers will continue to try to reach a nuclear agreement. A November deadline passed without an agreement. Now, negotiators are hoping to reach an agreement by July. Secretary of State John Kerry says the negotiations will be difficult.
These talks aren't going to suddenly get easier just because we extend them. They're tough, and they've been tough, and they're going to stay tough.
Experts say the new Republican-controlled U.S. Congress could make it more difficult for President Obama's foreign policy team to be successful. The Republicans are the opposition party to Mr. Obama's Democrats. The United States has already placed sanctions on Russia because of Russian support of Ukrainian separatists. The sanctions have hurt Russia's economy and reduced the value of its money. But American officials say they do not want the Ukraine conflict to stop the U.S. and Russia from having a good relationship. Eric Rubin is a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs.
No one's given up on the U.S.-Russia relationship. We have to get it to a better place.
The U.S. says it would end sanctions against Russia if it meets conditions, including withdrawing its troops from Ukrainian territory. The U.S. also faces challenges in its relationship with North Korea. Investigators in the United States blamed North Korea for an attack on the computers of Sony Pictures Entertainment in November. President Obama answered with new sanctions against North Korea. It was the first foreign policy decision he made in the new year. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz at the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Researchers at Stanford University have developed a new material that can move heat out of buildings and into space. The researchers say the material can cool buildings even on hot days. The cooling material is a very thin sheet with many layers that could be placed on a roof like solar panels. However, instead of turning sunlight into energy, as solar panels do, the material turns heat into infrared radiation. Shanwei Fan is an electrical engineering professor at Stanford University. He says that the panels have a layer of material that is like sand. He says that the panels act like a mirror. They take heat out of buildings and reflect the light from the sun. He says both the heat and sunlight are sent 100 kilometers into outer space.
It's a structure that cools itself without electricity input, even under the sun. So what it does is basically radiate heat to outer space and also reflect the sunlight so it doesn't get heat out by the sun. And the net result is you get something that if you put on a roof will have a temperature below ambient air temperature by a significant amount.
The panels are cool to the touch, even in the sun. Researchers say they can reduce the indoor temperature to nearly 5 degrees Celsius below the temperature outside. Mr. Fan says it is like having a window into space. He says the heat is sent directly into space without warming the air. He says buildings in developing countries that do not have electricity or air conditioning could use the panels.
In areas where one is off-grid, there's significant potential benefit for storing medicine or even food. In many of these situations, being able to reduce the temperature is important, and this will provide a way to do it.
The Stanford researchers described their technology in the science publication Nature. They say the main problem is creating actual cooling systems using the high-tech panels. They say it may be possible to develop a cooling spray that could be used on existing solid structures. The researchers believe the cooling spray technology could be developed in the next 3 to 5 years. They say as much as 15% of the energy used in the United States is spent providing power to air conditioning systems. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. Give us a like on the VOA Learning English Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Learn English. You can also watch videos on the VOA Learning English YouTube channel. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English. Welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Embry. Today, Shirley Griffith and I take you to one of the most beautiful and historic cities in the United States, Charleston, South Carolina. The Civil War began at its waterfront. Come along with us. Charleston sits on a piece of land in the southeastern United States that points like a finger to the Atlantic Ocean. Rivers flow by either side of the city. They are the Ashley and the Cooper Rivers. The people of Charleston will smile and tell you the Ashley and the Cooper join to form the Atlantic Ocean. They know this is not true, but they like to tell the story anyway. It shows how proud the people of Charleston are of their city. Charleston has a very rich history. It is the only city in the United States that can claim to have defended itself from American Indians, fierce pirates, Spanish ships, French soldiers, and British forces. It was first in many things. Charleston had the first continual train service in the United States. It built the first museum and the first public flower garden in America. And the first battle of the American Civil War took place on a very small but important island in its port. Charleston has some of the most beautiful and unusual homes in America. One travel writer has called Charleston the most friendly city in the United States. Charleston is all of these things and much more.
Plan your visit to Charleston for early spring, late autumn, or the winter months. The citizens of Charleston will tell you their lovely city is not fun in the summer. It is extremely hot. The summer heat is important to the history of Charleston. Early settlers owned huge farms called plantations. In the 1700s, these farms produced a plant called indigo, which is used to make cloth the color blue. Many plantation owners forced slaves to do the work needed to grow indigo in the extreme heat. Slavery became important to the economy of Charleston. The plantations, indigo, and slavery are part of the history of the city.
At least three Indian tribes were living in the area that became Charleston when Spanish explorers arrived in 1521. The Spanish explorers and later French explorers tried to establish settlements near that area, but none lasted. English settlers first came to the area in 1670. They established a town. They called it Charlestown in honor of the English king, Charles II. The people of the city changed its name to Charleston in 1783.
Many people came to live in Charleston because it produced indigo and had a good port. The people who settled the area were hard-working and independent. They considered themselves citizens of England. Still, they did not like some of the laws declared by the English government. The colonists successfully defended their city many times in the early 1700s. They defended it against both French and Spanish forces, and against raids by Yamasee Indians and by pirates. In 1719, the citizens of Charleston rebelled against the group of English men who controlled their colony. They wanted more self-government. Britain's King George agreed. This change gave the people of Charleston a feeling of independence.
Charleston is still proud of its part in the War for Independence. The city provided several political and military leaders during the American Revolution. British forces attacked it two times, but were defeated by the people of Charleston. The third time, the British captured the city and held it for more than a year. Charleston continued to grow after the American colonists had won their independence from England. The new federal government knew that the city was important. Workers began building a strong base to guard Charleston in 1828. This base was on a small island in Charleston Harbor. It was named Fort Sumter. It was designed to guard the city from any future enemy.
There were no thoughts of war or future enemies while Fort Sumter was being built. The plantations near Charleston had begun to plant new crops like rice and cotton. With the help of slave labor, cotton became extremely important to the economy of Charleston and much of the South. Many people in the northern United States began to think that slavery was very wrong, however. Slave owners in the South wanted things to remain as they had always been. They believed the federal government had no right to tell them what they could or could not do.
A national crisis began when Abraham Lincoln was elected president in 1860. The people of South Carolina believed he would try to end slavery by force. They voted to leave the United States. They were quickly followed by other southern states. These southern states soon created the government of the Confederate States of America. Federal troops controlled Fort Sumter when South Carolina voted to leave the Union. The people of Charleston demanded the federal troops leave. The Union commander refused. On the morning of April 12, 1861, a cannon was fired at Fort Sumter. It was the first shot of America's long Civil War. Charleston suffered a lot of damage during the Civil War. Several major battles were fought there. Late in the war, another battle for control of Fort Sumter continued for almost 2 years. Much of Charleston had been destroyed by the time the war ended. Rebuilding the city was a long and slow process.
The people of Charleston tried to save the historic buildings from the 1700s. They wanted to keep those buildings they felt were an important part of their city. The huge plantations near Charleston were also in need of rebuilding. Many owners failed in their efforts because they could no longer use slave labor. Their farms became much smaller.
The historic buildings of Charleston were affected by weather as well as wars. Through the years, ocean storms have severely damaged the city. A major storm struck Charleston in September 1989. It killed 18 people and caused more than $3 billion in damage. The huge storm had winds of more than 217 kilometers an hour. It caused high waves that severely flooded city streets.
The federal, state, and city governments and individual citizens have spent millions of dollars to rebuild and repair historic areas. So in some places, Charleston looks a lot like it has for several hundred years. In the center of the city are stores in small 100-year-old buildings. The same family has owned one of the stores for almost 150 years. Fine eating places throughout the city serve Southern food. The people of Charleston will tell you they have some of the best eating places in the United States. Many visitors agree.
Beautiful old buildings are a major reason thousands of people visit Charleston each year. One of the famous buildings is the Old Exchange and Provost Dungeon. It was built in the early 1700s. It was a jail that held the famous English pirate Stede Bonnet and his crew before they were hanged. Several of the old plantation farms near Charleston also are open to visitors. One is called Boone Hall Plantation. It is still a working farm. Boone Hall Plantation looks much like it did before the American Civil War. It has been used as the setting for a number of movies and television programs about the American South and the Civil War.
From almost anywhere along the waterfront in Charleston, you can see a large American flag flying over the small island that still holds Fort Sumter. Most visitors go to the historic fort during their time in Charleston. Several companies provide boat rides to the fort. Much of the fort was destroyed during the Civil War. But what remains of Fort Sumter is protected by the National Park Service. Park workers meet each boat and explain about the battles that took place.
Charleston has many interesting places to visit. However, the people who live in the city really make it special. They are extremely friendly, in a way that is part of the culture of the American South. The people of Charleston continue to keep their city beautiful using modern technology to protect their historic past. Our program was written by Paul Thompson. Internet users can read and listen to more stories on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. With Shirley Griffith, I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for another This Is America from VOA Learning English.